This is Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to cook for you. Folks, fire up those grills for the last long weekend of summer. And whatever you're grilling, rubs and marinades only enhance flavor, so don't forget to season the meat. Join me, Chef John Falls, and Meathead Goldwyn, grilling guru of the internet, as we talk about rubs and marinades on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news. Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table on this beautiful Labor Day weekend. It's so nice to have all of you with us, and Miss Shelley York is already sitting here in shorts and flip-flops.
End of summer.
It's finally cooled off.
Finally cool off. Yeah, I was freezing today.
Today.
I was freezing today. And across that wall right there, Dean Slom, our engineer, keeping us alive and well. How you doing, Dean?
I'm doing well.
You got big plans for Monday coming?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be in the studio tweaking some of this equipment.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing. And I really believe that.
No, I kid. We're going out to the beach. We're going to get our grill on.
I'm not a beach person, as most people know. I hate sand, and I can't stand sun, and it's too doggone hot out there.
The beach, it's cooler. You got that little ocean breeze.
I'd much rather sit in my hotel room with a pair of binoculars.
What you looking at? Looking to see what's on the grill?
So to speak. You doing all right, though?
I am. I'm doing very well. Just thinking about Labor Day weekend, and like I said, how it marks the end of summer. Kind of sad, you know. But in a way, it's good, because we can start putting those really dog days of summer behind us.
Oh,
Break from the heat. Yeah. There's a line in a poem by Sarah Whitman. Ah, summer, what power you have to make us suffer and like it.
Somewhat like you, actually. And I like this one from a Russell Baker. When summer gathers up her robes of glory and like a dream glides away.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that.
Isn't that nice?
Glory. It's hard to picture summer gliding, though, when intense heat.
Well, I think that's a good way to put it, because you're burning up, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and it's like gone. It's not like you can even remember how hot it was yesterday. Anyway, summer's glory is no doubt gliding away, but maybe melting in this heat. Since Labor Day barbecue is a great way to, you know, send summer packing, let's say, you know, in that little ice chest of yours. So absolutely, it might be gliding, but I'll tell you what, we're still going to be melting for a couple of days over here. I'll probably be hanging out at Old Smoky making some sausages and some briskets. You did have an opportunity to see photos. I know you hadn't had a chance to sample yet.
But I know there's been some sampling going on.
Oh, there's been some good food coming out of Old Smoky over at the White Oak Plantation Farm, my historic old smokehouse over there. In fact, we smoked our first big hams and picnic hams and back legs, and they're just sitting right now cooling down.
You know what? I bet a lot of the stovehounds out there are going to be firing up their grills over this weekend. And, you know, it's kind of the start of football season, too. So the grills are going.
Football season started already. I mean, we've been already watching all these pre-season.
Well, the tailgating.
Well, the tailgating. Well, chicken, fish, shrimp, vegetables, all great off the grill. But you know me, I'm all about meat. I'm beef. I'm pork. And at the same time, it's all about the seasonings. It's all about the spice. Some people say the marinades and these kind of things. For the most tender porterhouse or fillet, to the tougher cuts like the flanks, the hanger steaks, those nice lean pork chops, knowing how to season the meat is as important as knowing how to cook it, how long to cook it, what side of the grill to cook it on, using spice rubs and marinades, or the, some say, the tricks to making your meat good, making those grill meats come off full of juice and flavor and being kind of the hit of the pit neighborhood, so to speak.
Well, you know, marinades do have a long history. In Western civilization, they actually date back to around the Renaissance, when people marinated meats and seafood and vinegar and spices
to preserve and flavor the food. Nah, that wasn't why.
Well, sometimes it was to cover the taste of old rotten meat.
That's really where sauce came from. Yeah.
The early English diet consisted of a lot of mutton, which would be almost inedible without some sort of tenderizing and flavoring. In Asia, Koreans have been marinating beef in soy sauce, sugar, garlic, scallions, and sesame oil since the 1500s. Doesn't that sound delicious?
Oh, well, yeah, and I wonder how they put a time frame on that, because marinades, have been around, for a long time based on what you call a marinade. You know, I mean, it could be a little bit of anything imparting some type of flavor or some type of oil being used. But marinades are best used, many say, on tougher cuts of meats because they can also tenderize, and there's even a big debate about that. And they say as well as flavor, but there's even debate about that. When a marinade is designed as a tenderizer, normally it includes an acid of some type like vinegar or lemon juice. The acid attacks the fibrous, that connective tissue between the muscles, and softens it so that the meat will be less stringy. But of course, it has to get in there first, and that's always part of the controversy. As the acid penetrates the meat, it carries flavorings along with it. Some people say the longer you marinate the meat, the softer it's going to be cooked, because it starts to kind of eat up the meat with the acid, and it becomes kind of flabby and soft rather than a nice cut and a nice chew on the meat. Anyway, let me just tell you something. You want controversy? You talk about marinated and non-marinated. You talk about smoke. You talk about direct heat. You want controversy? You just bring up the term pit and see what happens.
You're not kidding about that. Other ingredients that have more of a tenderizing effect in a marinade are fruits, actually. Papaya, mango, pineapple. Of course, there are dairy marinades like yogurt or buttermilk. The lactobacillus bacteria acts as a marinade activator, softens the meat muscle. Asian recipes often use a yogurt marinade for lamb and goat.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Lamb and goat, huh?
For lamb and goat.
Well, marinating penetrates about an eighth to a quarter of an inch into the meat, and the muscle expands when the marinade hits it and blocks it from going any further. And herein lies the rub, so to speak. Over-marinating will break down the meat flavors too much, and as we just said,
the fibers?
Yeah, making it mushy and almost unedible. So it's important to follow a recipe and to study your books on the subject and make sure you understand what's happening and not just use, you know, what you hear from the neighborhood or whatever. There's a lot of good conversation on the subject of how you flavor meat for these big holiday cookouts, you know.
Well, you know, and there's another great way to prepare the meats, and that's using a dry rub.
Which I like.
Generally just a simple mixture of herbs, spices, salt, maybe even sugar, rubbed into the meat a few hours before cooking. Mixing rubs does have to be a bit of an artistic balance, though. Balance between the salt and the sweet and the heat. I think dry rubs are best for fish and chicken, foods that kind of don't need to tenderize.
In other words, you're just flavoring.
They create a delicious little punch of flavor on the outside, and without adding any moisture or without changing the internal chemistry or complexity of the meat.
Well, chemistry, I think, is what you're talking about when you read some of the great books of food science, which we do because we're in the food manufacturing business, and you hear how science looks at flavoring food. All of a sudden, most of the barbecue and smoking myths are just kind of thrown out of the window. But, you know, somebody was telling me the other day about a filet mignon. They said, oh, I like to marinate my filet mignon. I said, well, you know, it's so tender, it's so juicy already. Salt and pepper is really all you need on a great filet mignon. You don't really need anything else, you know. So, but anyway, paprika is seen most often in rubs, followed by ingredients like garlic and onion powder, salt and pepper, dried herbs, chili or cayenne. And again, depending on the region of the country or the globe for that matter, different spices and herbs added for that unique flavor of the region. But these are seasoning ingredients that really just go on top of the meat and just absolutely wonderful in flavor because they cook right on. They make that nice crust we talk about. And, of course, that's where a lot of the great flavor comes from, right there, those simple, simple additives. For a taste of the Caribbean, you know, a jerk rub is great on chicken. It uses, you know, things like allspice and cinnamon and nutmeg, those aromatic spices, we call them. And if you want a little bit more of the Asian flavor, you know, a Chinese five spice that has been around for so many years. Most people know the five spice and make it themselves by using a little cinnamon and cloves and star anise and fennel and, of course, those famous Szechuan peppercorns or red pepper flakes. And to keep that Asian flavor going, you might want to add something like a hoisin sauce or something like a sesame oil or something like a soy sauce that's going to kind of make a paste and kind of rub that on a little bit. Mm. Always gives you a nice taste of the Orient in about 2 seconds with all that five spice and those hoisin soy flavors. So, again, it's the flavor you're looking for, right?
Well, and it seems the more lean cuts of meat like pork chops are great when you season them with that wet rub that you're talking about or a marinade which kind of holds the moisture in the meat.
A lot of your great grill masters will tell you that crust that's formed on the top of a piece of meat by throwing it onto a grill, that those seasonings have been kind of rubbed on right there is really where the flavor is. And by putting it into your mouth and biting into it, you think that this meat has been just the flavor is permeated all the way through every bit of the grain, when in fact it's that first bite that just seizes the palate and all of your taste buds by the crust on top of it that really is where the flavor is coming from. It's all about the quality of the meat. Then you mentioned pork chops. I had some delicious pork chops off of my Hugs
the other day
with a lot of good marbling in it from
that
old Sabal.
Right?
And let me tell you what, a little salt and pepper.
A little granulated
garlic. Let me tell you what, you just locked the door, girl. That was some good meat, I'm telling you right now.
That's why it took you so long at White Oak the other day. And he gets back and says, I haven't had a mouthful to eat all day.
I brine my hams first with a brown sugar cane syrup cure, kind of a brine.
Now, do you just set it in this cure?
No, I inject the ham. Joints, and I inject it right into that femoral artery that you put the injection in there, and you can watch the whole ham just kind of expand as that juice goes right through it. Then you want to sink it down into a tub of marinade and let it sit at least 72 hours to pick up all of those flavors. And then I make that paste of Creole mustard, brown sugar, cane syrup, garlic and herbs, and then I rub it on the outside. I'm going to tell you what, I'm talking about some serious, serious combinations that create an unbelievable blend that you're going to only find in this part of the world. You know, all of these regions of the country are well known for their rubs and flavor. We're going to talk all about that. We have a great guest who's a very interesting fellow who really is the guru on all of this stuff. So he's going to help us through it. Dean is telling me it's time to shut my mouth. So I tell you what, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And we're going to be back in just a minute with a very interesting character.
When I was young, in my prime, got my barbecue any old time. Now I'm old, bones are cold, can't get barbecue to save my soul. Hey, little woman, who'd you get my barbecue to? I'm poor boy, long way from home. Poor boy, long way
from... Greetings, I'm Jake Abair.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left-field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
I've had all kinds of chicken, from barbecue to fricassee. from Kansas to Laredo, down to Memphis, Tennessee. But the greatest kind of chicken that was ever made was my famous Chinese chicken marinade. Chicken marinade, easy and
I have no idea where Slama. That's why we pay him the big bucks.
Wow, that is great.
Let me tell you, Michelle, we have a great guest that's joining us right now on the show, and we want to get right into this. So why don't you introduce him?
Absolutely. Our guest today is Meathead Goldwyn. Now, I'm not making that up. He prefers to be called Meathead, so we're going to honor that. He's also known as the Barbecue Whisperer.
That's a good
one. I like that. Chef, author, professor, wine enthusiast, and owner of AmazingRibs.com, one of the top 50 websites in the nation, and according to all the ratings, the most popular barbecue and grilling site. Meat has written hundreds of articles about food and drink as a syndicated columnist for the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, publications like Wine Spectator, Wine Enthusiast, and Restaurant Hospitality. Right now he's writing for Huffington Post, founder of the Beverage Testing Institute. He's produced 7 books on wine, beer, and spirits. He's taught classes at the prestigious Le Cordon Bleu in Chicago, Cornell University's Hotel School in Ithaca, New York. You may have seen Meathead as the host of the Food and Drink Network on America Online. He's been a judge at barbecue contests from Kansas City to Memphis. I would say he is the authority.
He's the best man to have on the show today. Definitely best man.
Absolutely. Welcome to Stirring It Up, Meathead.
Well, I am honored to be here and flattered. You have done your research. I just sent you one paragraph about me. You're bringing up all kinds of stuff from my past.
You know, sometimes with chefs and cooks, the past is the best we have, you know, so we want to remind ourselves about the good times, you know.
I don't know. Don't ask my ex-girlfriend.
Meathead, it is so great. We've had a little chance to chat right before coming on air, but I mean, what an amazing site, and we're going to encourage all of our listeners to make sure that they access all of your great information, because there's so many myths, so much folklore out there on this subject. And what I really appreciate, being a chef and so involved in food science myself, to see that you take it to the next step in everything that you do, and not only is talk about the fact, the folklore, the interest, the regionality, but at the same time, getting your science buddies and the people you know around you to make sure telling us why things happen, why things don't happen. And I think that's really incredible in your site. What prompted you to get into this, to create the site that you're Amazing Ribs? What was that about?
Well, my daddy was a backyard barbecuer. You know, I actually lived in South for a number of years, all through my high school and college years. You're in Louisiana, so I won't tell you where I went to college. But it's a large green reptile in my background. And
yeah, and mine too, and mine too.
Oh, are you a gator?
No, but I live amongst them. I'm here in the South.
He just eats them.
But Daddy was a barbecuer and our griller, and I always loved when he cooked. Mom was a good cook, but when Dad brought in a flank steak, nice and crispy and charred on the outside, medium rare on the inside, I had to learn how to do that and hang out with him. So it was always a love of mine. And I had been in the wine world for many, many years as the wine critic for the Washington Post and the Chicago Tribune and syndicated around the country. And left the wine business a little bedraggled and harried by the preciousness of it in the year 2000, and decided I would really do what I love the most, and that's grill for a living. And I started AmazingRibs.com in 2006. It became my full-time job in 2010, and I'm making a good living at it, having fun, and it's like a giant book. There's over 1,000 pages on that website of technique and recipes and equipment reviews. It's just a lot of fun, and I'm living the dream, you know?
And you're doing it really well. When you look at your site and you go to the homepage, you see weights, measures, conversions, tip techniques, recipes, equivalent reviews, barbecue culture, history, my ingredients, barbecue joints. I mean, can I just keep on? I mean, it's all there.
My favorite thing,
let's,
though.
Let's not talk about me, though. You invited me on to talk about cooking. And
no.
We have some good stuff to talk about, because folks out there are cooking all summer long, and we were going to talk about marinating, and that's a great topic.
Well, I tell you what, when I look at the secrets and myths of marinade that you put together, it's absolutely incredible. So, yeah, absolutely. Let's jump right in to it.
Okay, so we were talking about dry rubs. If you add liquid to a dry rub, then it becomes a wet rub. So What's the difference between a wet rub and a marinade at that point?
It's a very small difference. All right, let's do some term definition here. Dry rubs are usually a mixture of herbs and spices just sprinkled on and rubbed into the meat, and it's a great way to get texture and flavor onto the surface of the meat. It doesn't penetrate very far, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into the marinades. Wet rubs are usually when you mix them with an oil or something like a mustard, and so you end up with more of a paste. And the reason you mix it is because a lot of the flavors in herbs and spices are soluble in either water, oil, or alcohol, and sometimes they're not soluble in both. So if you mix it with an oil, you'll, particularly in green herbs, you'll dissolve some of the flavors, and that helps transmit it to the surface of the meat. And then a marinade tends to be more of a liquid. The food can swim in it. It's wet, you know, like a salad dressing is often used as a marinade. And then related to this is brines, because brines are a saltwater liquid, and sometimes they have herbs and spices in them, too. So they're all related. They're all ways of delivering flavor to the food. And I say food because it's used primarily on meat, but they're also used on vegetables. I mean, my garden is swimming. And, hey, do you want some zucchini?
I would love some.
No, not me. I don't need.
I got a few the size of a baseball bat I'm trying to get rid of.
Meathead, one of the things that you hear constantly with the barbecue gurus out there, they talk about their marinades and they talk about how, you know, how long they keep them in and how long to tenderize the meat and that the flavor is everything in marinades. But in most cases, that's not necessarily fact. Tell us a little bit about the effect of marinades on meats and the myths involved with it.
Well, a lot of people think that the marinades or the dry rubs will penetrate deep into the meat. And the fact is they don't really. Let's think of a piece of meat as it's about 75% water, and the rest is fat and protein and other trace chemicals. But 75% water, so it's like a sponge. Now, you think of a sponge. You spill some milk on the countertop. You start to soak it up until the sponge is saturated. And you can't get any more in there. You can wipe around, but you're just pushing the milk around. Well, the same thing with a piece of meat. It is pretty darn close to saturated with water. So if you soak it in a marinade, which is mostly water or oil, and we know oil and water don't mix, it's not going to get in. It just can't get in. Now, the one exception is salt. Salt is a little tiny molecule. Water is H2O, three molecules. Salt is sodium and chloride, just two. And they dissolve in water very easily, and there is an electrical and chemical thing that goes on. So that's how brines work. Salt really will penetrate. It'll get right down to the center, and that's how we do curing. That's how you do bacon and the corned beef and pastrami. But the other spices, like sugar, sugar's got 45 carbons and hydrogens and sulfides and all sulfurs and all that stuff, and that's a huge molecule. It just cannot get too far past the surface. Same thing with garlic. It's really helpful to think of rubs and marinades as surface treatments. They're a way to bring a lot of flavor to the surface, and they will get in the cracks and crevices because that surface of that meat is not smooth. There are cracks and crevices, and it'll penetrate maybe an eighth of an inch. And I got pictures in this article that we're talking about called The Myths of Marinades, where I used a green dye, soaked meats and vegetables in green dye. And you can see real plainly, it's all on the surface. It just doesn't get very far.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible because when I'm looking at the picture right now as you're talking, as you look at chicken breast or whatever, and you have the green dye on the outside, because I know most aficionados out there think to themselves that the longer you keep that meat in that plastic bag with all these marinades, that you're going to penetrate all the way to the surface. And you make it so clear through these examples that it's just not happening. So how do you get? You mentioned the cracks and crevices. It does crawl down in there. But how do you get flavor, or is it important to get flavor to the center or closer to the center of meats? How do you help it if in fact, you do need to get it there?
Well, as we all know, salt is the amplifier. Salt is like turning up the amp on your music. Salt amplifies all flavors, and salt will get down in because of the chemical and physical reaction. So you can use salt. And there's actually a technique called dry brining where you just sprinkle salt on the meat and stick it in the fridge for a few hours. And what happens is the water will come up from the meat, melt the salt, and pull it back in, and it migrates down in. And depending on the thickness, you know, a chicken breast, it can get all the way through there in a couple hours or so. So dry brining or just salting is a real great way to amplify flavor. But you're not necessarily going to get garlic and paprika and other things down into the center. And here's where we're getting away from the science. We're getting to a little philosophy. I don't want the center of my steak to taste like garlic. If I'm going out and I'm paying money for a ribeye, I want it to taste like beef. I'm buying a swordfish, I want it to taste like swordfish. You know, chicken, turkey, pork, they all have such wonderful, unique flavors. I don't mind amping them up with a little salt. I don't mind treating the surface with a rub or a marinade or a sauce. And, you know, when you marinate the surface, you get those flavors on the surface. You cook. They cook onto the surface. They stay there. And when you slice into it, it gets pushed down into the meat. It gets on your plate. You mop up the juices with your plate. So it gets in there. But there's another technique that works really well called gashing, or at least that's what I call it. Let's take a chicken breast, for example. That chicken skin, it's a rubber blanket. It is not letting a lot of flavor get through. It will let salt through, but it certainly won't let marinade flavors go through. That's why I was laughing at that theme song you played at the beginning. I loved it. If you'll take the skin off your chicken, you can take a sharp knife and put a cross-hatching, maybe a quarter inch deep or so, and what happens then is the marinades will get down into those cross-hatches. I got a picture of a squash, a zucchini, that I do the same thing with. You can cross-hatch or cut into the surfaces of the meat, and the flavors will get down into those cracks, and that will help deliver a little more flavor down in there. But I'm not a huge fan of monkeying with the natural, wonderful flavors of good meats and vegetables.
You mentioned that you have a great acronym for marinade, SOFA, that's on your website.
Yeah.
But what does that stand for?
Yes, SOFA is if you are going to marinate. And remember, we're talking primarily as a surface treatment, how to affect the surface of the meat. Then SOFA stands for salt, oil, flavoring, and acid. Now, you start with salt because, as we talked about, salt is magical. Salt is different than everything else. Salt will get down in there, and it will amplify flavors. And some things like soy sauce, which are heavy in salt, will work similarly. Oils are great because they will dissolve some flavors, like particularly fresh herbs. You can soak fresh herbs in water all day and then drink the water and you won't know that it's had fresh herbs in it. But if you soak fresh herbs in oil, I mean, you may basil oil or tarragon oil, they're wonderful. The oils will extract those flavors. But you got to be careful. Oils will drip on a hot fire and cause flare-ups, and that'll layer soot on your meat, and nobody wants to eat soot. F is for flavoring. And that's where you put in your oregano, your paprika, your garlic, your onion powder, whatever else you got. And A is for acid. And acid will slightly tenderize the meat. It will denature the proteins and the connective tissues that hold the meat fibers together slightly. And acids are like lemon juice, wine, grapefruit juice, vinegars, balsamic in particular. Mm. So a good base for a marinade is SOFA, salt, oil, flavoring, and acid. But keep in mind, it's mostly on the surface. It's not getting down deep in there. Although when you start cutting and eating, it gets on your tongue, and it'll fool you. But the way to test it is, and I describe this on my website, and I've done this, and it's really fascinating. You take two big, fat, thick pork chops, and you cook one with just a little salt on it, and then you marinate the other one for 24 hours in whatever you want. And when you're done, you take them out, and you cut off the outer layer, maybe a quarter inch, and taste the core center. They both taste almost identical.
You know, Meathead, one of the things that I found so interesting in what you just said just now is that, you know, in our restaurant, when I think of our cut to steak, and you think of us just rubbing outside of it with a blend of seasonings, that whatever these dry seasonings are, to create that crust that we're throwing under our broiler. And we cut into it. At the end of the day, we never analyze as chefs, well, you know, is it penetrating? Is it this? Because we know when that piece of meat hits the tongue and the palate of that diner, you know, and they bite through it and the tenderness or the bite is there, really the explosion of flavor is coming from the surface and it's just permeating the whole taste buds. And that's basically what you're saying here, that the most unbelievable flavor is cooked onto that surface. It drips into the juices of the steak, and you're getting...
And your teeth become the delivery vehicle. Your teeth
absolutely
through that crust. And you know, this is another thing that is important about marinades. That steak, you work hard to get a good dark brown crust on that surface, because we know about the Maillard reaction and caramelization, and brown is beautiful. Brown is full of flavor, and that steak is brown, and it's got crust on it, and that is absolutely stunning flavor. And you know that the crust is different than the center. If you marinate a steak, you make that surface wet. Now you put it down on the grill or under the broiler, and the first thing that has to happen is that moisture has to evaporate. So the outside is steaming, and you're not going to get a good crust until that moisture evaporates. By that time, the center may be cooked, and it's time to pull it off. So, you know, all these folks who are marinating their flank steaks and such, they're not getting a good, dark, crunchy crust. Somebody might come away from this conversation saying, boy, he is not a fan of marinating. I think they'd be right.
What about the differences in, say, beef to chicken to fish? I mean, do you treat them differently?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because here I am, I'm dissing marinades left and right. But we have to say that some foods do absorb marinades better. Beef, very little. Pork, very little. Chicken, a little more, but not much. But when you get down to, hey, you're down there on the Gulf. Shrimp, oh, man, shrimp, lobster, they just drink it up. They do absorb marinades. Yeah, I mean, you know, pepper oil on shrimp, it'll get right in there, and it'll get in there in a hurry. So I'm glad we got the chance to get that caveat in here, because they do penetrate. That's a different molecular structure, different types of cells. For example, there's just not much fat in those meats. So, yeah, they will absorb. But, again, it becomes a matter of philosophy. Lobster. By golly, I just love the taste of lobster. You know, I don't think it needs a lot of
that's right,
monkeying around. A great piece of red snapper, something out of the Gulf of Mexico. Gosh, you know, I don't think I want to get a lot of garlic flavor down in there. I just want to taste the fish.
Meathead, I tell you, I'm going to ask you to hang on with us a little while. We're going to take a quick little break. It'll only be a minute, and then we'll come back. Will you hang on for a minute? We'll continue our conversation on the other side.
Chef, I'm not done until you say I'm done.
Yeah, because I'm looking at you sitting on the patio right here with a beer in your hand and your dog with that beautiful white face. Look, I tell you what, we're going to come back in just 1 minute. Don't go anywhere. Take a sip of that beer, Meathead. We'll be back in a second.
To end with the kiss. So come to the barbecue, my darling, my dear. I'm so in love with you, and when you are near.
Hey, miss this year's Latin Alternative Music Conference? Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me and my guest co-host, Latino USA's Nadia Raymond.
You'll hear great new music from Chile and amazing new ladies on the music scene.
That's next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got Otis Taylor on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise. We'll also hear from our feature host, Barbara Ching, as she continues her look at country music and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Saturday night at 11 here on KRVS.
Francomics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
From Scotland, Ireland, North America, and even further afield, bask in the glow of my selection of more new music from Celtic roots. Join me again this week on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Thursday night at 8 and Sunday evening at 6 here on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller les dimanches matins? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud. Tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h, on va charrer en français, écouter de la musique en français et boire un petit tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
I worked the last 351 days, waiting on my 2 weeks paid. I got my ticket in my suitcase. And by this time tomorrow, I'll be 24 hours on a bar stool, salting up that green juice, frozen in a lemon lime haze, soaking it up in a margarita marinade. And
I like that.
He is the best at song research.
Now, look, let me tell you something, Meathead. I don't care what food show you ever go to. You'll never find one better than this one.
Oh, you know, I do a lot of radio, and I'm having more fun today. You know what it is, Chef? I was raised in the South, and it's just so nice to hear a Southern accent again. I can slip back into it really fast, really fast.
Well, you know, the good thing about living in the South, it's all about food, it's all about fun, it's all about family, it's all about people coming to visit. So we're happy to have you with us here today. We've been having a great conversation, y'all, with a great, great guy, Meathead, the Guru of Q, we call him, and of course his website, Amazing Ribs. It's an encyclopedia of not only science, but all things related to grilling and barbecuing. And I promise you, you would absolutely love this site. Now, Michelle, you might want to tell Meathead about your little barbecue pit you bought.
You know, we're looking at this picture, and you're a man after John's own heart, because all the apparatus you have back here on your back porch, good grief, it looks like John's. If you weren't in the picture, I wouldn't know the difference. But yes, I am the proud owner of a Weber BBQ. I call it my barbecue pit with training wheels.
Is that the Weber Smoky Mountain?
I don't think so. Baby, it's little bitty.
The grill, the Weber Kettle Grill.
Yes.
Oh, that's a fine little grill, you know?
It is.
You can really do things nice on that. And, you know, we have an equipment review section on the website. I have a full-time man who does nothing but test grills and kick the tires on them. And, you know, when it comes down to cooking a piece of steak, that's a really fine tool for it. And people go out and they spend thousands on gas grills. And I love gas grills. I've got one. I cook a lot of my chicken on it. But nothing beats a Weber kettle for whooping up a steak.
Meathead, you talk about shortcuts in marinade as we talk about marinades and flavors. Give us a couple of shortcuts for the folks out there who say, okay, I just went to the store, I got a ribeye, I just went to the store, I got a breast of chicken, and I do want to add some flavors to it, but I've got to get to the grill in the next few minutes. Well, what's your recommendations?
Well, we talked earlier about salt. I know a lot of people are on restricted salt diets, but you don't need a lot of it. And salt just turns up the natural flavor. It really doesn't change the content flavor. And then, of course, pepper, salt and pepper. I mean, if you watch the food channels, the cooking shows, they put salt and pepper on everything, and with good reason. They just amp up flavors, and that's a good way to go. if you think, as I have been trying to impress you with, of a marinade as a surface treatment, then 24 hours of soaking in a marinade will not have a huge difference than putting a sauce on at the end. So, I mean, hit it with some salt, get it on the grill, and if you want to add some flavor, whoop up a sauce or make up a concentrated marinade and baste it with this while it's cooking, and now you're laying down those flavors on the surface, and you'll have just a darn tasty meal.
And I love your recommendation, which I've done often as well, and you recommend even going to the store and buying a good salad dressing and diluting it with water, which is also a nice quick prep. And you would you'd recommend that as well. You say except Caesar's, and that makes sense.
Well, you know, there's a gadget on there called vacuum marinades that are popular out there, and they're used in the commercial food industry. They have these big vacuum tumblers. Probably you've seen them, Chef. The food processors will take pork loins and ribs, and they put them in these tumblers. They're like drums, and they suck a vacuum, and then they dump a marinade in there. And they do pull the marinade into the meat a little better, but you've got to be really careful here because they pull things off the surface into the inside, and if the surface has been contaminated, it can pull contaminants down in there. So I'm not a big fan. I'm married to a PhD microbiologist who works for the FDA, and she's a food safety expert. She's the editor of a food safety magazine, so readers out there can trust my recipes. But I'm not a huge fan of these vacuum tumblers that are on the market for speeding up marinade, because I fear that they could enhance the possibility of contamination.
And I agree with you as well. You mentioned just now that you're a fan, you do have a gas grill. What's your preference when it comes to grills? Are you looking at charcoal? Are you looking at green eggs? Are you looking at gas grills? Or what's your preference, mm-hmm. or do they all matter?
I really think they each do different things better. Because it's my business, and you saw the picture, and by the way, none of those grills that are in that picture are still on my deck. It's a rotating it's a rotating cast of characters. But there's always a gas grill out there, and there's a lot of things that I just look at. All cooking, indoors or outdoors, is a matter of temperature control. And if you can control your temperature, you can be a good cook. The most important thing for temperature control is thermometers. You'll probably back me up on this, Chef. Backyard cooks are not as experienced as your line cook who's cooking the same steak from the same distributor, the same thickness every night. He can look at it. He can poke it with his finger. He can tell when it's ready. You cannot do this in your backyard. You need a meat thermometer, and these new digital meat thermometers, you can get a good one for $25. I've got a whole page devoted to thermometer reviews. That is the most important thing you can get to up your game in the backyard, is a good digital meat thermometer. And while you're at it, paint that dial on your grill black and ignore it, because it's a piece of garbage. Whether you've got an expensive grill or a cheap grill, just ignore that, because it's up in the dome and your food is down below on the cooking surface. And unless you plan to eat the dome, you don't care what the temperature is up there. You need a good thermometer that sits down by the meat on the surface. And again, there's some really good digitals, inexpensive. You can get expensive ones. They get them with Bluetooth and Wi-Fi now. You can go in and watch the game and monitor your grill while you're inside. But back to your original question, temperature control is what cooking is all about, indoors, outdoors, wherever you are, campgrounds, whatever, if you can control your temperature. And gas grills are really good at temperature control. So there's a lot of stuff I do on my gas grill. But when it comes to steaks, lamb chops, red meats, where I want a good dark sear, where I want the brown surface, crunchy and flavorful, my Weber kettle or one of the other more fancy charcoal grills that I have is the way I go. I love my Hasty Bake. It's a great one.
Oh, my God. That's a great old name.
You know it. You know that
my
machine.
God. Now, I think it's one of the best on the market. Absolutely. The Hasty
Invented
Bake.
Invented in 1948, even before the kettle grill.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And the design hasn't changed much. And the beauty of it is it's got a crank. And you can raise and lower the charcoal bed. There's temperature control.
That's right.
You can put the charcoal right up under the meat for searing. lower it down for slow roasting. I love that, baby.
And I do, Tom. So glad you mentioned that. Michelle, remember I told you to go get your digital thermometer? You finally got it, huh?
When you said thermometer, I thought John would pass out because he is always buying a new thermometer. And he tells every chef in the company, you got your thermometer?
Real chefs know. The backyard warriors are the ones that say, thermometers are for sissies.
Right.
These knuckle draggers need to wake up because the real chefs know medium rare steak is 130 to 135. It's not 125. It's not 145. And if you cut into that meat in the dark with a flashlight to look at the color, you have no idea what the real color is because the color of that flashlight and the meat will change color as it's exposed to oxygen. That is just no way to tell how your steak is doing. And it won't hurt your meat to poke a hole in it with a thermometer, because if you've got an 8-ounce steak, 6 ounces of water, if you stick a hole in it with a thermometer, what are you going to lose, a quarter of an ounce? There's plenty of water left in there, plenty of juice left in there.
Meathead, let me just tell you this. I have a culinary school at Nicholls State University. We're going to probably have as much as 500 students. We're building a brand-new culinary center there. My school, my school is about 16 years old. It's a Bachelor of Science degree in culinary in Thibodaux, Louisiana, in the swamps of Louisiana. And my first class walks in, and I address that first class every year of freshmen, and I say, what is the job of the cook? And they all look at me, oh, we create this, oh, we do this. And they go into all of these things, and I said, the job of the cook is simple. We manage heat and we build flavor. That's all we do. And if we can do that, then we're great at what we're doing. You've mentioned in just about every topic that we've discussed today, managing heat and really concentrating on the simplicity of getting flavor on food. I cannot thank you enough. I want to tell you how much we appreciate you being here. This has been a great show today, just hearing your enthusiasm, your excitement. We welcome you to come and visit us in the Swamplands, and certainly I get to Chicago every now and then. We need to hook up. We need to talk a little bit.
You do, even if you're just laid over at O'Hare for an hour, let me know, and I'll buy the drinks. I was down in Mobile just in February. I wish I had known you then. I would have made the trip over.
Well, you up north, and that's a good place to be up in Mobile, but, I mean, you come south down in Louisiana. Well, Meathead, one last question, and then you're gone. What about a book? When can we expect your book? And now I realize you have a 1,000-page book on the website, but do you have a plan on doing a hard copy for us?
Houghton Mifflin Harcourt has me under contract for a book called The Science of Barbecue and Grilling.
Right.
No surprise on that title.
Right, exactly.
There? And they have told me they want it definitive. And I am plugging away on it right now, and
that's
it is
great.
Scheduled to come out spring of 2015. Because the dead tree publishing industry is a little slower than the internet publishing.
That's right.
And, but it should be a good book, and it should contribute somewhat to the knowledge of outdoor cooking, and I'm having fun writing it, and I'm working my butt off.
Well, you're a great guy. We love talking to you. I want you to do me a favor. Go to my website, jfalls.com, and then I want you to go to White Oak Plantation Farm, and I want you to look at my 40-50-year-old two-hole outhouse that I resurrected off of one of the old plantations in Louisiana and turned it into my brand-new smokehouse. I want you to take a look at it because I think I just loaded up the first test coming out of that smokehouse. I think you'd appreciate just looking at that.
You
okay?
Bet. I actually listened to some of your podcasts in advance. I heard you talking about that project. Yeah, you betcha I'll go look at it.
Yeah, you go take a look at it, Meathead. You're a doggone good man. I appreciate and we'll see each other face-to-face soon.
Let's do this again.
Let's do it again. Absolutely, let's do it again. You'll be our go-to guru when it comes to this subject, okay?
It'd be my pleasure. I really did enjoy talking to the two of you.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. And the music only gets better. Meathead, thank you so much for being with us.
Take care.
All right, Michelle, are we still talking books on the subject?
Yes, of course we are. Okay. Well, now, I want to start off by telling everybody again the website, Meathead's website, AmazingRibs.com.
Absolutely.
Because it is a great book, so to speak, on the subject. I do want to recommend a book called Marinades and Rubs, 40 Tantalizing Recipes to Stimulate Your Palate and add spark to your meals.
I got it right here. I see it right here.
Written by Carol Wilson. The author actually takes us on an international journey of spice and gives us the ingredients and recipes to create the flavors of Asia and South America and the Middle East. You'll find Argentinian chimichurri marinade in there, Jamaican jerk, Moroccan recipes. Don't worry, though. She hasn't forgotten the good old USA. We're represented in there with a Coca-Cola marinade, a Creole rub, and Memphis-style rub.
It's a great little book. Great,
it's a great book that will make you a pit boss.
Well, I think if they just follow a meathead's instructions about just kind of throwing it in there and putting it on the surface, they'll be pretty doggone good.
There's another book, Marinades, Rubs, Brines, Cures, and Glazes, 400 Recipes for Poultry, Meat, Seafood, and Vegetables. And I think a lot of times we forget a little bit about the vegetables because they are fantastic on the grill. This was written by Jim Tarantino. The author actually refers to himself as a serial griller. After perusing his book with all the great recipes, you'll understand his passion. The book will give you the know-how on various methods of flavoring meats, clues you in on marinades and rubs, brining, cures, glazes, all of it. He even gives you a grocery list for how to stock up the pantry, so you'll have all the ingredients right there at the ready when you fire up the grill.
When you fire up that grill.
Absolutely. That's right.
And of course, y'all, I want to mention our Facebook page, facebook.com/starringitupradio. And I know
that's
Slama,
a public forum.
And Slama, you have a lot of great things
way. What we've been doing on this Facebook page, this is our portal on the internet where you can be part of the show. You know, you can call in, so to speak. But we've been putting up a bunch of pictures. We've got some photos from various show topics and what have you. But if you have something you'd like to say or contribute, come on by. It's facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's without a G in the stirring.
No, absolutely. And we do have a lot of great pictures and fun topics on that. I'm going to put onto my site a couple of our marinades and recipes, of course, which you're going to find there. And one of the things that I really love, you're hearing acid mentioned a couple of times. A meathead was talking about acid and sugar and herbs and all of that. And I absolutely love my community coffee marinated. There's your acid and just a little bit of the cane syrup from Steen's that we just kind of rub along with that coffee into a filet mignon and just kind of put a little herbs on it, tarragon, basil, sage, you know, things like that, whatever you like to put. Anyway, I want to thank Meathead again. And remember, again, his site, AmazingRibs.com. You want to go there. He's got so much on it, you can't even believe it. He's been a great guest.
And I love one of these. I just got to tell you, there's an article, A Dissertation Upon Roast Pig by Charles Lamb, 1822.
I got to read it. Y'all, be safe out there and watch those propane bottles, okay? You know what I mean? Watch it. See you next week.
Hi, this is Helen Forster, inviting you to tune in to E-Town this week. We have another husband and wife team with us, musical veterans Over the Rhine, plus hot newcomers The Lone Bellow, and a great E-Achievement Award story for you as well. All this week in E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana. KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Le rendez-vous des Cadiens du Théâtre Liberté à Yunis est rendu possible en partie par Le Best Stop Supermarket de Scott.
Underwriting for Rendez-vous des Cadiens live from the Liberty Theater in Yunis.